Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of HR Leaders Live, the show where we discuss the future of work with today's most innovative and successful people leaders. The topic of today's show is how to turn disruption and change into opportunity and advantage. Today, I'm joined by Daniel Burris, who's a technology futurist, innovation expert, LinkedIn influencer, and author of the award-winning book, The Anticipatory Organization. Daniel, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, and thank you for having me back.
It's been a while, right? It's been a whole year.
I know, and so much happens in a year in this new age that we're in.
Exactly. Fantastic. Well, really excited to have you back on the show. And even when we first spoke, I was always thinking about LinkedIn Live, and especially as you have such a huge following on LinkedIn and done some amazing work here. I'm so happy to have you here live on LinkedIn to share your insights with our audience, and also to bring your audience along the conversation as well. So fantastic. But before we jump in, for those that are listening that aren't aware of your work and your background, could you just give us a quick overview of your work and sort of your journey to where we are today?
Yeah, you know, I often people ask me about how did I get into being a futurist and innovation expert, but I actually started out long ago teaching biology and physics. So I've got a science background. I did that for a number of years. Then I started over time, six companies. Five were profitable in the first year, four were national leaders in the United States in the first year. So in other words, I don't just write books and do consulting and speaking. I actually have done these things. And a little over 30 years ago, I started my research company, Burris Research. And that's where we started researching global innovations in all areas of technology, lasers, robots, genetics, fiber optics, artificial intelligence, all of those things. I came up with my forecasting methodology and have since written six books and thousands of articles, and here I am.
Fantastic. And I said to you before the show, I was it was amazing to see how well received our previous episode together was, and all of the HR community really embraced that episode and took so much away from it. I shouldn't be surprised, right? Because you think about disruption and innovation, HR is at the core of that in many organizations. They're trying to rein everything together in a business. But I was wondering, you know, when you was writing this book, The Anticipatory Organization, who was you writing it for? You know, who should read this book?
Yes. Well, you know, I didn't say the anticipatory individual. And the reason is because most of us are in an organization, whether it's two people or 2,000 or 200,000. And if you have one or two people that are anticipatory and everyone else is reactionary, you're not going to be a happy camper. So I want the organization to do that. And let me just say that I'm really excited to be talking to HR professionals and executives, because the only competitive advantage that cannot be copied is culture, is the organizational culture. And HR is all about the human part of that, and really leveraging and elevating the culture to increasing relevance based on the direction the future is going. Because it really is a matter of relevance out there in that marketplace that we're in. So I think HR holds an absolute key to giving us greater competitive advantage, and also a key to help us to use AI in the best possible way, as well as other technologies, machine learning, and so on, so that we can maximize our human resources rather than use technology to marginalize our human resources, because you could do either, and there is indeed a choice.
I know there's sort of 25 sort of core strategies that you share in the book in terms of how to accelerate innovation and transform you know, results. Can you share some of your favorites? I know we don't have time for all 23. People have to grab the book for that. 25 stories, but could you share some of your top ones there?
Yes, well, and I think one of the really things that that makes this book is why it's been such a bestseller is because I'm providing tools, not just concepts, and I'm giving you the how-tos. For example, the skip it principle is one that people really love, and that is take your biggest problem and skip it. And it allows you to move forward faster because there's these barriers in front of us. So let me just share a couple of the skip it principles or elements to it. One of them is whatever problem you've got, no matter how big it is, that's not it. That's why you can't solve it. You're working on the wrong one. If you get down to what the real problem is, you can solve it. And let me give you an example. There was a large hotel chain that had just built a number of new hotels, and they were getting complaints in all of the new hotels about the slow elevators. Everyone's complaining about the slow elevators. Now, to make elevators change speed, well, that would be millions and millions. They'd have to replace the whole thing. That'd be a really big problem. But was that the real problem? The answer is no, that's not the real problem. The real problem is people were bored waiting for the elevator, and that's why they noticed it was and thought it was slow. So the solution was to put a full-length mirror right at the entranceway to every elevator. And all complaints went away because now you could check your tie, you could check your dress, you could make sure, oh, gee, it's here already.
Is that why it is? I never knew that. Is that why they have the mirrors in front of the lifts?
Another quick example would be at an airport, a new airport that was built, and everyone is complaining about the slow baggage. In other words, they were there waiting for their baggage really long. And to change that baggage system at an airport would be really difficult to do. But, you know, what is the real problem? The real problem is people are getting there before the baggage. So what do you do to solve that? Well, you reroute them so it takes them a little longer to get there. Now everyone is saying, wow, isn't it great? They're always here on time. Maybe you've been to that airport.
Yeah, I have. It's so funny. There's two examples. I never thought about that because there are times where I've been in airports and we're like, I just realized we went this way, where we could have went straight and would have been there in like a few minutes, but we've been taken around everywhere and back again.
So now you're starting to get the craziness to it. But yeah. But the reality is that got all of a sudden everything is there on time and you eliminated all those complaints. And few people complain about how far they're walking because they just assume they have to walk there.
They don't even know, right?
As well. That's exactly right. So I just gave a couple of examples of making sure that you know you've got the you're solving actually the real problem, the correct problem. Another one is opposites work better. And that is to take a concept and to flip it and look in the opposite direction to see the solution that it might be far better. As a matter of fact, let's combine Skip It and opposites and give you an example that combines them both. I had a niece that called me recently. She's got her first job. And she said on the phone, she said, Uncle Dan, I've got a real problem. I can't save money. I'm making money, but I can't save any. And I'm working hard at saving it, but I can't save it. And she knows it's possible because her older sister, Audrey, can save money like crazy. But Hallie, she can't save any money. She said, I'm trying. And I said, well, no wonder you're working on the wrong problem. You need to work on how you're spending money, not saving money. Because if you work at how you're spending money, you'll save money by default. By the way, those are opposites.
Sure.
So often the opposite is giving you a solution. Now, I really just gave a couple of elements that help you to innovate. And in the learning system, we have one on how to transform planning and then 7 lessons around that. We have one on innovation and how to accelerate innovation. We've got another one on culture and another one on results. Let me pick one on planning because we all do planning. Let me give you one out of there. And actually, it's a core to being anticipatory. And as a matter of fact, before even doing that, why did I call it anticipatory?
I was going to ask you that.
See, I anticipated that.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Everyone has really jumped on being agile as the best way to deal with the rapid pace of technological change. And if you really think about this, technology is accelerating at an exponential rate. I've been tracking it for over 30 years, not just from Moore's Law, which says processing power doubles every 18 months as the price drops in half, which has been around for over 30 years. It creates a curve that starts out slow, 2 becomes 4 becomes 8. But after a while, it swoops up extremely fast. And we're in right now the holy cow phase of this exponential curve. That's why things are happening at such an accelerated pace. So agility is a reactionary strategy, and it's a good one. It is reacting quickly, because agile is reactionary, after a disruption disrupts or after a problem occurs. And by the way, I'd like you to be good at being agile. There's a lot of things you cannot see that come out of the blue. You need to be good and agile. However, in a world of exponential change where it's accelerating, agility has less value every year. You need another strategy. I call it the other side of the strategy coin, and that is anticipatory. How to anticipate disruptions before they disrupt. So you now have a choice to be either the disruptor or the disrupted. How to anticipate problems before they occur, so you can pre-solve them instead of waiting and letting them happen. Most of the problems that every person that's listening to this will have within the next year, you can identify right now and pre-solve, but you're too busy crisis managing, putting out fires, and dealing with the present. So this is about opportunity management and becoming anticipatory. So to do that, a core principle is learning that all trends can fall into one of two categories. Either they're a hard trend that is based on a future fact that will happen. You can't stop it, but you can see it coming before it hits. Or it is a soft trend, and that is an assumption about the future, often seen as a future fact, but it's not. It's an assumption that may or may not happen. Now, it might be likely to happen, but that is very different than it is for sure happening, because it's all about managing risk, really. Think about it. If you have certainty, you have the confidence to make a bold move. And today in this world, we all seem to have nothing but uncertainty. What's going to happen with AI and jobs? What's going to happen with blockchain? What's going to happen with the cloud? What's going to happen with elections? What's going to happen with the EU? We've got all of this uncertainty, and an uncertainty does not empower me at all. As a matter of fact, it's a brake versus an accelerator. Slows progress up. People don't write big checks when they're uncertain. People don't say yes to fund your project if they're uncertain. However, when you have certainty, now you have the confidence to make a bold move. So hard trends is an anecdote. It gives you the ability to have certainty in that uncertain world. One other thing, I love soft trends, because soft trends, even though they are not future facts, the beauty is if you don't like them, you can change them. A quick example, I'll take a U.S. example. Healthcare costs have been going up for a long time. And it seems like there's no end in sight. By the way, that's called a trend. Mm-hmm. And now, is that a hard trend, unstoppable? It's going to be up next year and the year after. Or is it a soft trend? You don't like it, you can change it. When you start to realize, actually, it's a soft trend, you could change that. You have now the capability of taking action. For example, just to not leave you hanging there, we could use blockchain to bring transparency to the U.S. healthcare system that has very little transparency and very little trust. Mm-hmm. Most people don't realize in the hospital an aspirin might cost you $20, $20. If you need that, you'd have your wife or your husband bring one. But at much less the artificial knee you're having put in that can vary by cost by hundreds of percent, even by the same manufacturer. But you don't know the price. No wonder we have problems. So mm-hmm. when you have transparency, trust, and increased security, all of a sudden you have greater competition and lower costs. Now, I could go into virtualization and how that can lower costs, how we could virtualize the supply chain network and flush billions of dollars of waste out. The point is, there's actions that we could take. A example of a hard trend, a very simple one, would be, we've got 5G starting to come out. We've got 4G now. We're just about to get 5G wireless. And by the way, that is transformational. We'll come back on that if you'd like.
I've read a lot and watched a lot. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
It is a very big deal. But let me just give you the stream of consciousness I'm giving you all right now. We have 4G. We've got 5G. After that, is that it? Well, no. You're going to have 6G, followed by 7, followed by 8. And actually, ever since 1G, I've been able to very accurately predict when the next one would come out and how powerful it would be. By the way, it comes out in a faster amount of time each year, predictably, because it's riding an exponential curve.
Interesting.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
And I did say I would mention something about 5G. Let's just take a little break here and mention that. And that is 4G. Before you had 4G, we didn't have streaming on our phones. You couldn't stream a movie. In other words, Netflix wasn't doing what it's doing now. I mean, they weren't able to do, and they didn't have the power, the networking power, to be able to pull that off. We didn't have Uber. We didn't have billion-dollar companies that are billions of dollars today. 4G enabled that. So here's an insight I want to give every person listening right now. 5G over the next 24 months. Wow, I'm giving you a short-range prediction. You're right, I am. Over the next 24 months, we'll start seeing billion-dollar, with a B, companies emerging around 5G capabilities within the next 2 years, because it won't be until 2020 that we start getting the 5G chips in our phones, and it'll take 2020 and the beginning of 21 to get a 5G in all the major cities.
Yeah.
I know in San Diego, where I have one of my offices, 5G is already there. But the phones aren't 5G yet. They're just starting. Up. Mm-hmm. But when we have both, you've got another revolution. And that's just one. You know, we've got multiple revolutions taking place all the time, all over. So what does that mean from an HR perspective? Let's just tie it down to that. We're at a unique tipping point in human history right now. We've never been there before. We're at the holy cow phase of that exponential curve, where we're doing amazing new things this year that were impossible just last year. And we're going to be doing new and even more impossible things next year and the next year. And again, with hard trends, you can start to see what those are. That's why I want you to do that. So here's what I'm getting at from that tipping point. Why don't you make this broadcast right now, this live LinkedIn broadcast, a defining moment for you right now as you listen to this, a defining moment for you and your organization. That means this isn't just another one. We'll watch it and say, yeah, that was cool, and go back and crisis management and get busy again. That means you need to start asking yourself, what are those hard trend future facts that not won't maybe, but they will impact us? And they're either going to be a problem, a disruption that will disrupt us, or since we can see it before it hits, we can leverage it to our personal and our professional and organizational advantage. Why don't you take a little time spending 1 hour a week? This is an action I'm giving you right now. Why don't we take 1 hour a week and unplug from the present and plug into your future? After all, that's where you're going to spend the rest of your life. Maybe you ought to think about it. And in that hour, why don't you ask yourself, what do I know? What am I certain about? What are those hard trends that are shaping the future that relate to maybe technology or demographics or even government regulations? And what are the opportunities for your organization relating to each one of those trends? By the way, I just gave you an important concept, and that is a trend by itself, who cares? It's only when you attach it to an opportunity for you that it bursts into life. So in that hour, what are the hard trends shaping that shape the future that are there for us that will impact you for sure? And what is the opportunity for you to take advantage of it? And what are the soft trends that you could influence to your advantage? So, and then you'll come up with a list. And then what I'd like you to do is to refine it into one or two things that you take action on that'll help you to make this a defining moment for yourself and for your organization.
Well, thanks so much. That's so much information, Daniel. So thank you so much for that. I'm sure everyone's sitting there writing down loads of notes, and practical those steps you just mentioned, and my team did that after listening to our first podcast. And it's been one of the main things that we do now as an organization, and me personally, looking at what's going to impact us as a business and then putting steps in place. So from a content perspective, I've been looking at that, you know, what's the future of content and what platforms are going to be out there, hence why the fact we're here live on LinkedIn, because I understood that LinkedIn Live will be a huge platform in the future and a huge strategic advantage for us as a business. So I made sure that we were one of the first organizations out there to be part of this LinkedIn program.
Because yeah, just to make a quick statement about that, what did you do? Well, you had the confidence and the certainty to know that was going to happen. And if you didn't move on it, someone else would.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's a principle. If it can be done, it will be done. If you don't do it, someone else will. And yeah. So what you did is you had the confidence, you made a bold move, and you made it happen. And by the way, congratulations.
Yeah, well, thank you. And by the way, I didn't know it was going to all plan out this way. And when I got that message, you know, back from LinkedIn saying you're going to be one of the first people, I think actually we were the first company in Europe to live stream on LinkedIn, if I'm not mistaken. And it was because we took those actions. And it was based around that exact principle that you mentioned. And I was talking to you before the show about some of the other platforms we're moving into now with in the IoT space to make sure we're really ahead of the curve, like bringing our content to the Alexa. You know, and so I'm trying to think further ahead of where the industry is moving and how people are going to consume content as well. So, and that was directly off the back of that. So one thing I want to jump into is how do we identify areas of disruption where people were seeing as challenges, but we can in turn use as opportunity?
Well, here's a really interesting way to think about it. And that is everything can be better. Everything. There is no such thing as perfection. Everything can be made better. And the worse it is, the better it is if you're looking for being an active disruptor. You see, let's take the word disruption just a minute. Most people see that as a negative. Why? Because it happens to you, and now you got to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Does Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, see disruption as negative? No, one of the people he's disrupting. So here's the insight I want to give you around disruption. I would like you to become a positive disruptor. And I'm emphasizing the word positive, meaning ask yourself, what are the processes that you have internally in your organization that need disruption because they're not that good? And then become the positive disruptor because it needs disruption. And frankly, you'll find a lot. You'll start uncovering. And of course, what I would do is go for the low-hanging fruit. Then I would be looking at technology. You know, what are the emerging technologies out there that I could use to be that disruptor? And remember, there are problems you could skip here, as we talked about a little bit.
I love that part, by the way.
Yeah. For example, you mentioned you're using Alexa already. You didn't have to own AI. You're using Amazon AI.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Yeah.
And Amazon said, you can use it for free. You can develop your own stuff around it. Here's a kit to do it. Well, great. You took, once again, to your credit, you took action. Most people are listening to these kind of things and they're saying, yeah, that's good. And they go back and get busy. I would like our listeners to do what our host did. And that is take the extra step of action and do it now. Because most of us think we're moving fast, but in reality, you're actually moving slow. You need to up your game. And you might say, well, if I move fast, I can't because my plate is full and all my people's plates are full and there's no more room to do anything else. And here's what I'd say about that. And that is, when something new comes along, we grab it. There's all these new things we got to do, new initiatives, new plans and everything else. Watch an old Tarzan movie when you get a chance and notice Tarzan swinging from vine to vine, going through the jungle. When he grabs a new vine, what happens if he doesn't let go of the old vine behind him?
He's stuck in the same place.
Stuck in the same place. See, I think we're all so busy grabbing all the new vines, we're not letting go of anything, and we end up stuck. So here's the insight. The key is, what are you letting go of? After this broadcast, why don't you put and write down what you are letting go of to free yourself? And by the way, what do you let go of? The things that are less relevant as the world is transforming. I want to be looking at what are the new things that increase my relevancy and our organization's relevancy based on the direction the future is going. And those new things I want to grab onto and to have a balanced life. What are the things I'm letting go of? Make sure you're letting go or you're not going to be very happy.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a bit more about the new anticipatory leader model that you've created? Because I know you had the anticipatory organization, but now you have the new work you're doing around for the individual leader, right? Could you tell us a bit more about that?
So I started out with the anticipatory organization learning system, which is really a blended learning system. It's both online, but it also has an element where you work with teams. So there's a part where it's human to human, and it's a part where you learn online. Basically, you learn some content and apply it to yourself, and then you work as a team to apply it as a team. So that was sold only to organizations, or licensed, I should say, and has created some amazing results. I'm really happy with what's that done, that has been able to do. What we did recently was we then created one we call the Anticipatory Leader for Individuals, because we have so many people. I mean, again, I've got over 1 million people on LinkedIn that are individuals that would like to do these types of things, not to mention others. And so we created that. And again, you can find out more about the Anticipatory Leader for Individuals on at burris.com.
Does it follow the same model as well? Because in the previous model, you have the sort of develop opportunities, shape the future.
It does follow the same model, but we've modified how you apply it, how you work with it. And we created some forums for individuals to exchange with each other. Because again, if you're doing it by yourself, you don't have a team to work with.
Sure.
So what we did is we created some really great interactive components to it, both in the lessons so that you could apply it with others, even if you're doing it yourself. But you could also tie into the other people around the planet Earth that are taking it at the same time you are and share what you're doing with them and how it's working for them. So it's a way of even being an individual, but not being alone in this learning system.
Sure. You need that social learning, right? I think it's very, very, very important to have that. Could you share some of the practical examples in terms of the application?
One was a smaller accounting firm, and they were trying to come up with a new competitive advantage they could have in the marketplace because they could see AI might come in and automate some of their tax work and some of their auditing work. And once they did the hard trend thing, they took away the word might and realized it will. What this firm did was they looked at, you know, what are the hard trends shaping the future for us and also for our clients? And what are the problems that are predictable? See, one of the things that you can do is come up with what are the predictable problems that you know will happen, and is there a solution? And what they realized is, this was a smaller company, that a lot of the small companies that they serve don't have really good cybersecurity. They really are very bad at cybersecurity. And if they do have some protection, it's really not protecting their IP and all of those things that that we think might be okay. So what they did was, they actually found a small cybersecurity company that they acquired. In other words, they decided to create a new practice area for their accounting firm on cybersecurity, and which is not normally thought of as part of
it. Yeah, of course.
But they brought this in to offer it to their accounting clients. Well, this was a small regional firm in the Southeast. That became, within 12 months, their fastest growing part of their entire practice. It became national rather than regional, and it was huge. Well, that came from just doing what are the hard trends shape in the future? What are the predictable problems that our clients are going to have? Is there a solution that we could provide our clients that could create a new revenue stream? That all came right from the learning system, and I could give you countless others.
Sure. Just by sitting down and taking the time out from the busy day and just having that conversation.
right. and being and having the confidence to know that it would be done. Somebody's going to do that. Somebody's going to offer that to small clients. By the way, that another company, and now we're going to talk HR, recently, this is another smaller company in the United States. They saw that a lot of other small companies don't do HR very well, and it's really a hassle. If you look at all the features that HR and not features, functions that you have to do. So they decided to create a virtual HR department as a service that you could use if you're a smaller company. In other words, instead of having your own HR department, you use the HR as a service from the company. And they're just starting to launch that. And I think, frankly, that's not a bad idea. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't need an internal HR department. It just means if you're smaller and you're having trouble with doing a lot of the HR functions, a lot of that could become a service that you purchase and pay a monthly fee for. By the way, as you can hear from me just saying that, that's going to increase, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, do we know that? Is that just an idea that's here and gone? Or do you think HR functionality as a service offered to other companies is going to grow?
Yeah.
You already know that's going to grow.
I mean, I'm seeing it more, especially as a startup right now, right? I mean, that I don't have a HR department right now. We're still quite small, but being able to outsource that in the time being, not everything, but more of the administrative side would certainly free up some time for me. To be more strategic and focus on hiring and developing our team. So certainly would be helpful to have something like that in place.
Even and you could take functions of that. Imagine you as you grow at some point, and we could be talking about any company, but let's just take you as you grow and you need to hire more people. And of course, there are going to be some people you might have to let go as well. That's a function that could be a service that is provided. I mean, how do you find good people? How do you find qualified people? You know, how do you go through that process? Well, you either you're going to have to do that yourself, or maybe someone else can do that for you as a partner. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, no, of course, I see where you're going with it. I'm interested to know, because you work with a lot of the largest companies in the world around innovation, and you consult from them, work directly with them. What are the key questions that they ask you and come to your chat, concerns they have? What are the type of questions they're coming to you with when you're working with these large organizations?
Well, I think, like everyone listening to this, we all know that there are major technological shifts taking place right now, and the world is changing much faster than most organizations are prepared to go. And there's a lot of confusion about what is AI, what is the future of AI, and how is it different than machine learning and blockchain? What is that really? And is there a way that I could apply it now, or is this still in the R&D phase? So there's questions about that, and it can be at the highest levels. I'll just give you an example. I was just out in Washington, D.C., meeting with leaders from the defense industry on AI. And frankly, these were some of the smartest people around that are working in deep in AI, and they're excited about machine learning, AI, and other elements of it. So here's something that I just did with these top people. Remember, this is the top people, and I'm saying, so how would you define artificial intelligence? I asked someone, and they gave a definition. I asked someone else, how would you define it? They had a different definition. I asked another one, how would you define it? They had a different one. Oh, let's talk about machine learning. You just said you're excited about machine learning. How do you define that? And they gave me the definition. I asked somebody else, how would you define it? They gave me another one. And I said, so when one of you is talking about machine learning, the listener may not even know what you're talking about. You see where I'm going?
Yeah.
So what I'm getting at, and this is an HR benefit that you could bring to HR that would be powerful for an organization, and that is common definitions, so that we are all talking about the same thing. You mentioned IoT before. Well, ask seven people, pick randomly.
What or is blockchain, right? Whenever I ask someone what blockchain is, that's a whole other question. Like, even when someone asks me what blockchain is, I really struggle to give them a definition of what I've read about it. I know what it does, but trying to give a definition of it is very difficult
to do. So what I'm getting at is, What if we actually had a common language? We used to, but now with all these new tools and technologies that are so important to us, we're kind of losing our common language. And I think having a common definition, common language speeds it forward. Now, luckily, what they asked me to do, one of the things they wanted me to do is to come up with the definitions for them, which I did. So now they can use those to have a common language as they develop all of their applications. And of course, I write about those things in my blogs. And if you'd want to read more about that, you could. But I think having a good understanding, that's, I think, one of the strengths that the Anticipatory Organization Learning System has brought to companies, is it creates a common language where people will say, oh, that's a problem you can skip. Well, they wouldn't know.
Yeah, and now they know what that means, right? That
mean. Yeah. Unless you've taken the learning system and they say, oh, yeah, you know what? We could skip that. Or that's a future fact. Or no, that's not a future fact. So you create a new language that enables you to be more relevant and get solve problems faster and again, have the confidence to make bold moves. It is an HR area, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the simple questions we can ask ourselves to know whether we're going to be disrupted?
You are going to be disrupted again and again and again. I talked to a leader recently that said, we were just disrupted really big time 6 months ago. Glad I got that out of the way. Well, I laughed like you did, because what is going to happen again and again and again? It's like being at the shore and watching waves come in. They're not one wave. There's many waves. They keep coming. So if you are looking down at your feet, you don't see the wave until you get wet if you're standing in the water. But if you raise your head and you look off towards the horizon, which is looking at the future, by the way,
mm-hmm.
then you can start to see the waves way out there and you can take appropriate action. That's what being anticipatory is about. Seeing the waves of disruption before they hit. So what I'm saying is, you're either going to be the disruptor or the disrupted. There is no middle anymore. It can be one of the two. And by the way, the clock is ticking on you, because we're at an exponential curve rate. Things are happening faster and faster. We can think about these things and go back and get busy, or we can realize, you know, this is a defining moment. We need to actually take action on these now. And you might think there's too many things to take action on. Where do I start? And it starts with that hour a week where you spent, like I asked you.
Love that. Yeah. 1 hour per week.
That's how you start. It's doable. That's why I suggested it again in this broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
1 hour a week is doable. And you take the time and don't just do it by yourself. Meet with your team. And make that list. And by the way, once you put a list together and a year goes by, you already blew it. You should be doing this on an ongoing way.
Yeah.
Because there's
and actioning on it, though. But make sure you actually.
They're coming in.
Yeah, but you have to action on it, right? So I hear a lot of, I used to be part of leadership teams in the past where we'd have a lot of those conversations, but nothing happened. So a lot of talk of not enough, no execution around that. But we only had those conversations as a small part of a larger conversation, as opposed to having a dedicated hour where that's our core focus.
So at the end of one of those meetings now, every meeting, it should end with, so what action are we taking in the next 24 hours? Yeah, that's fast. Mm-hmm. What could you do in 24 hours? Make a phone call. Get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Make an appointment. Do something. So what are you doing in 24 hours? What are you going to be doing in 30 days? By the way, what are you doing in 60 days, 90 days? And by the way, who's doing it? If you don't have some action from that conversation, why are we having that conversation? Is this an academic exercise, which we've been having for decades? Mm-hmm. Well, we're now at a point where your initial question was, how do we tell if we're going to be disrupted? And I said, well, you will already. This is a future fact. Now, I would like you to turn that disrupted into being the disruptor. Disrupted is a soft trend. What does that mean? Well, if you can see it coming, you don't have to be disrupted by that disruptive new technology and wave. You can be the disruptor. You see where I'm going?
Yeah, exactly.
Disrupted is an after the fact situation. Disruptor is a before. So I would like us to be positive disruptors, disrupting the processes, the products, and the services in a positive way, making them all better, elevating them. And the more dramatic, the better. And there we go into a word that we didn't talk about yet, and that is it should be transformative versus change.
The use of the word transformative as opposed to change.
Exactly. And yeah. So here's a way to think about it that I think is very helpful for people, and that is change always comes from the outside in, causing us to react and put out fires and crisis manage. Whether it's personal or organizational, transformation always comes from the inside out. Just think about that a minute. That's a big concept. It comes from the inside out. People don't transform their lives, or in companies don't come up with a transformative new process or product. They don't come from the out. It comes from the in. And you know what's wonderful about that? You have control over that. See, I can't control the things that come at me.
Yeah.
I can control the things that come from me mm-hmm. that I'm doing. So if I can see the disruption coming, it hasn't hit yet.
Yeah.
That means I can create a transformational, positive disruption from the inside out that is transformative in nature. So BlackBerry transformed our mobile phones, giving us the ability to do emails. No, they didn't transform it. They changed it. It was Apple that transformed the smartphone, not mm-hmm. BlackBerry, right?
Yeah.
They made it. They didn't change it. They transformed it. It was not Blockbuster didn't transform how we watch movies. It was Netflix and companies like that. They're the ones that transformed it. It was Uber that transformed how we get a cab. And by the way, why didn't a cab driver think of Uber? Why didn't, why didn't Marriott think of Airbnb? And here's why. They were all busy doing what they've always done.
They didn't have that 1 hour meeting.
That's a big risk. They were all too busy to take that hour a week and look at what are the disruptions that are coming that haven't hit yet that we can take advantage of and turn that disruption into an advantage for us so that we can be a positive disruptor, creating the disruption that is meant to be, that is going to happen anyway. And by the way, if I don't do it, someone else will.
Yeah. I actually heard a story. I don't know the specific details, because it was many years ago about Uber, where the original sort of co-founder was pitching the idea, but before 4G came. So it wasn't at a stage where the idea was almost too early, if that makes sense, because the infrastructure wasn't in place, and loads of VCs skipped on Uber because they're like, well, we can't track we don't have the technology. We don't have 4G in place everywhere, you know, to do that. And then, but that wasn't the reasoning, by the way. That just was the fact at the time. And then, as soon as the infrastructure came out for 4G, you know, all of these companies emerged, like you said. And that's something that I linked into it. And I just want to ask a question. So we're seeing more and more companies like the Blockbusters, et cetera, and the Toys R Us's and stuff like that sort of fall to the wayside and be disrupted. Is it happening more and more now, or is it just more and more visible?
Accelerating, and you're seeing it more. It's both. We're all seeing it happen. And it is happening faster because we're at that exponential curve. And let me just talk about brick and mortar retail, since you kind of brought an example up like that, mm-hmm. and the concept of future view, which I talk about in the learning system and in my books, how your customers, how your kids, how we view the future shapes to a great extent how we act in the present. Right now, there are people that are buying Apple. There are people that are selling Apple. What's the difference? Their future view of Apple. Some mm-hmm. people are starting a company. Some people would never start a company now. Some people are buying their home and taking a mortgage out. Some would never do that right now. It's all based on future view. How you view the future shapes how you act. And by the way, how you act will shape your future. Your future view will determine the future you. So now let's relate that to brick and mortar retail. If you have a large chain of brick and mortar retail outlets, and your future view of brick and mortar is the good old days of retail are behind us. Well, you might close over 130 stores. By the way, Sears is doing that right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you think the good old days of brick and mortar retail are ahead of us, they just don't look like the days behind us. Well, you might open up over 100 bookstores and be Amazon, which they're doing, opening up over 100 brick and mortar bookstores.
They are, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, why are they doing that? They see a future there, don't they? And by the way, they're opening up over 1,000 other stores, even though they're Amazon. And it's not just Amazon. Waverly Parker and I've been tracking over 100 e-commerce only sales sites that are selling things like glasses, like I mentioned, glasses frames. You can only get them online. What are they doing now? They're opening up brick and mortar.
Really? Why is that, by the way? What is the trend there?
Because they're redefining the customer experience. Why are Toys R Us? Why is JCPenney's? Why is Sears having trouble? They're boring.
Yeah.
Go in those stores.
Sure.
Go in the store. I mean, why go in a store?
Yeah, there's nothing that will make you. There's no difference between you buying it online and going in the store. So you might as well just buy it online.
But when you go in, you can't find a sales clerk, and the sales clerk doesn't know as much about the product as you do. But what if we had people that were trained in high-level customer experience? What if we created a sales experience where it's not the same old, same old? Also, every brick-and-mortar store has the ability to have infinite selection by having what? A big giant monitor in high definition there, where if you don't have it in stock, you could get it right there, whatever it might be, and you could have it delivered in what? Well, a day, 2 days to your house immediately, and you can do a price compare right there to see if Amazon has it cheaper. And by the way, you know what they'll do? They'll give it to you cheaper right now if you buy it today right here.
Yeah. If you put it that way, it makes more sense.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Well, yes. So we can either roll over and die, as so many of these retail companies are doing, because they see a future view of, well, the good old days are gone. It's all going to be online. Instead of saying, no, you see, they don't understand another principle that I teach in the book and in the learning system, and that's the both and concept. You see, when something new comes out, we think the old is gone. It's either the old or the new, and I got to pick one. But it's the old and the new. The old being brick and mortar, you just need to give it a reinvention of new life. And it's the new, which is, and it's also online. But you know what? We got to reinvent that too, because online's getting a little bit old and a little crusty too. Our web pages are kind of getting a bit boring, aren't they? Mm. And what about search? Look at Google. Do a search for you and your company, or me and my name. You pull up hundreds of thousands. Well, how far do people drill down? You know, 6, 7, 8, and that's it. Maybe. In other words, does that mean everything else is irrelevant, or is there something else that's good there? Could we reinvent search to get you what you really want? Or is it just going to be what it is? And what I'm suggesting is, Google better watch out. You could reinvent search right now as well.
Sure.
You can reinvent everything. And you know what I say? I love that. Why?
Yeah.
Because it's amazing opportunity for all of us. There's a mountain of opportunity that's fogged in by the news. The news creates the big fog. Bad news sells, good news doesn't sell. And if there is no bad news, they give you the anniversary of bad news. So I would like you to do is spend a little time looking at the mountain of opportunity right in front of you and become the positive disruptor. Don't be a passive receiver of the future as each day unfolds. I would like you to become an active shaper of the future, creating a better tomorrow for yourself, for your family, and for others.
I was wondering, because one of the things that I'm hearing more and more now on my calls and with my podcast with HR executives, how do you create that culture of innovation, right? And it's something that constantly keeps coming up at our workshops and the podcasts. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, in today's most companies today, and no matter where they are, there usually is perceived, there's a team that does the innovating.
Yes.
And
innovation hub.
And so that team that does the innovating has certain procedures they go through and so on. And what I've done is disrupted that myself with teaching that through the learning system and my anticipatory organization book, how to redefine and reinvent what innovation is in a company. So being specific, two areas that are left out is what I call everyday innovation. And everyday innovation is everybody's job. So instead of saying this is a separate team that does that, it's you can do that on a daily basis. And that is be anticipatory about your work. For example, how many people have said, well, I knew that wasn't going to work.
Yeah. Well, why didn't you say anything then? Oh, it's not my job.
I knew that problem was going to happen. Well, yeah. So part of an anticipatory organization is empowering people to, if they know something isn't going to work, take action, fix it. You know, that is, so you're a receptionist at a hospital and at the emergency room. And you can see, wow, well, there's a line there because of this and because of that. But, you know, I'm just stuck here as a, this is my job. No, your job is to actually speak up. Your job is to pre-solve predictable problems and make it easier. So it's empowering people with that. And what I also do is share tools like take the problem and skip it. In other words, so what's the real problem there? Is that line and that bottleneck in the emergency room, what's really causing that? What is it? And using some principles, you can drill down, find out what it is, and solve it. Mm-hmm. So so again, there's tools for that. Another area that's not dealt with that I cover quite extensively is what I call transformational innovation, or think of it as exponential innovation. And that is taking giant leaps ahead with low risk. Now, normally, giant leaps ahead are high risk, but actually, if they're based on identifying the hard trends that are going to happen anyway, you can take a giant leap ahead that's actually low risk. Actually, the new risk is not taking the jump ahead because your competition, somebody else is going to do it. So what's the cost of not doing it? So those are two elements, and there are more. I've got 8 innovation pathways that are based on hard trends that will happen that give you a way to innovate. In that whole learning section on innovation that I have, and other tools.
Fantastic. Well, for everyone listening, if you enjoyed the show, guys, make sure you hit the like button and share this post so everyone else in your network can benefit from the great knowledge and experience that Daniel shared today. So share the love. So click share on there. Apart from that as well, if you're not already following, most of you are already following Daniel probably at this point, but if you're not following Daniel, make sure you go follow him over on LinkedIn. Also check out the blog on his website, and we'll be live again on Friday. So if you want to catch another live show, make sure you follow me here on LinkedIn to be notified next time we go live. Apart from that, thank you so much again, Daniel, for joining us. It's been great to speak with you again, and I'll see you again soon. I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
See ya. Bye.